you. So the dumpster is on fire again. The site's down. Your boss's face is an ever-deepening purple. And you begin to question whether you should join the incident channel or call an ambulance to deal with his impending stroke. Yes, we know this is a developer's fault. There is plenty of time for blame later. Postmortems have a macabre name because they were once intended to be Viking-like funerals for someone's job. But we're civilized now, so we call them post-incident reviews. Fires are never going to stop. We're human. We miss bugs. We fat finger commands, deleting dozens of servers, and then essentially bringing down S3 and US East 1 for hours. But we can fundamentally change how we approach fires. And to do that, it requires adopting the solutions and techniques of industries much older than ours. Firefighting, the kind with actual flames, was created as a lucrative scheme by Marcus Crassus in ancient Rome. Only we wouldn't have considered this brigade to be heroes. They would arrive to the scene of a fire, negotiate the price of their services with the homeowner while doing nothing, and if an agreement could not be reached, they would let the home burn to the ground. And then, at the end, offer to purchase the property for a fraction of the price. This is probably not a great strategy if you're pitching a VC, but you might be able to get that sweet, sweet Series A. You're just gonna need to use the word blockchain in your proposal. Firefighters have clear procedures and a strong hierarchy. The first truck to a scene immediately begins assessing the situation. They evaluate building construction, visible smoke, fire, and flow paths. The incident commander, or IC in this case, gives orders to his or her personnel regarding fire attack, as well as calling for additional resources, communicating with those not yet at the scene, and preparing an action plan, which sounds a lot like the tight, orderly process of a hot fix in a crisis, right? Just kidding. I'm Emily Freeman. I'm a developer advocate for a company called Kickbox. Our API is a smarter, better reCAPTCHA. We ensure that your users are real people with legitimate email addresses. This is actually my first time in Dusseldorf, so I'm excited to be here with you all. This talk is going to focus on how firefighters approach a fire before, during, and after an incident, and how we can apply those strategies to our own, admittedly much less dangerous, fires. Who here has responded to a code fire? Doesn't have to be on the level of a GitLab, but yeah, something. Okay. Who here was the cause of that fire? Yeah, the rest of you are liars, so thanks for being honest. Let's just assume that you're all innocent, doe-eyed junior engineers who have never actually been the cause of a full-on crisis. I'm gonna explain to you how it's gonna go down. You'll cock your head and look a little squinty at something that looks a little off. Maybe the site's taking 20 seconds to load. Maybe your fake user account suddenly has admin permissions. Uh-oh. Your body's gonna go cold. Your heart will plunge into your stomach. You will frantically rack your brain trying to figure out if you're the cause of this. A sudden sense of relief will wash over you. You are not responsible. It was probably the quiet guy who sighs a lot during code reviews. You'll very confidently type git blame. Oh God, yeah, no, it's your fault, absolutely. You are definitely fired. But, you know, maybe no one noticed, so you'll check Twitter. See if anyone's mad. Yeah, Twitter hates you. Not only are you fired from this job, you're never gonna work in tech ever again. You're gonna very calmly type a message into the incident channel in Slack and say you suspect something is wrong. You will try to remain calm, but everyone's gonna know that you are absolutely panicking. At this point, your boss is gonna freak. This is normal. Just stay calm. It's prison rules now. You're going to want to look straight ahead, no eye contact. Maybe you deployed a bad code, deleted a database. Either way, oopsie daisy, we all do it. So what now? Well, you're going to figure out how to fix it. And if you can't fix it, you're going to ask for help. That's why you have teams. Even though the stakes feel really high, often they're really not. Following an incident, there is always a postmortem or post-incident review. I'm just kidding. There's almost never a postmortem or incident review. And if there were, it'd mostly be finger pointing and suggestions for switching a tool from, I don't know, maybe AWS to Azure or Docker Swarm to Kubernetes, because tooling is always the issue, right? This process sucks. Literally none of us like it. I believe we can do better, because firefighting has become a long way, a really, really long way. And I'm not talking about way back in Rome with Marcus and his crew of hooligans. I'm talking about 50 years ago. And if firefighting, something that is rife with military-like regulations, can advance quickly and methodically, surely tech can. That's what we do best, right? Iterate quickly to find the best solution. So what made firefighting advance so quickly? Unfortunately, simply put, funerals. People died, homes were destroyed, forests were razed. The 70s are known for disco and bell bottoms and, oh my God, terrible polyester outfits. It was not fashion's greatest decade. But hidden in all of that, it also saw a lot of political upheaval. The Cold War was in full swing. Much of the Middle East was warring with Israel. And the US began winding down their involvement in the quagmire that was Vietnam. Buried deep in all of that chaos is a series of destructive forest fires in California. So destructive and deadly, firefighters were forced to rethink their approach. So they went to the state. And those folks at the state did what any bureaucrat would. They had a meeting. And then those folks formed a task force. And because a government agency has never met an acronym it didn't love, they named it Firefighting Resources of California, Organized for Potential Emergencies, or FireScope. FireScope distilled their findings into four key critical areas: flexibility, consistency, standardization, and budget. An organization must be flexible to respond to the needs of various incidents. Firefighters sometimes rescue ducks from drains and cats from trees, and it's great because we watch the videos on YouTube. But they also respond to events that are catastrophic, as terrorist attacks. These events call for radically different responses. Sometimes our fires are buggy code. A simple revert will fix it. And other times, someone force pushed to production and you've got to wade knee deep in builds. The folks at FireScope realized they were using one communication system for house fires and another for forest fires didn't make any sense. The more you use a particular system, the more it becomes second nature to you, embedding itself in your muscle memory, which is why we have dumb arguments about which IDE to use. It's not because one is necessarily better than the other, but because we're personally comfortable with it. And that level of comfort and familiarity makes the process of development faster and less stressful. It's also important to standardize everything and make it easy to understand. And hopefully the Wi-Fi works. One moment, guys, sorry. The Wi-Fi stopped working on this. I can't control it. AV is always fun at conferences. For as technical as we all are, this is the hard part. It says that this is the issue. The Wi-Fi over here is fine. I don't think it is. If you want to hand it to me, I can fix it. Bad joke. No? None? Corey, you have a dad joke.
Are you sure?
Yes.
In Sweden, they have barcodes on the sides of the ships, so when they come back to port, they can Scandinavian.
Try that. Yeah, that deserves a good one. All right, let's make sure this is all working. You know, it's good to have a historical record of what actually went down. There we go. Yay! It's working! Okay, thank you. Firesighting systems and processes must be standard enough that someone who works... Oh, can you fix the thing? Welcome to Comedy Hour. Sorry, guys. Hi. Hey, okay.
A pun only becomes a dad joke when the punchline becomes apparent.
That one was significantly better because it got a groan. Dad jokes should always get groans, not laughs. Thank you.
If you tell a dad joke to your dad, you'll see a grown man.
I just... Okay, all right. Corey will be around after the show. Okay, so you want firefighters who work on forest fires all the time in Northern California in a pinch to be able to go to Harlem in New York and help a firehouse there. And this, I think, is where DevOps really starts to impact the discussion, right? When the site's down and your boss is freaking out, you really want to be able to bring someone in from another feature team and have them help you debug the situation. If you can't have people adapt to different situations, you might as well be on call all the time. Because you or your team, if they don't make it easy to contribute, it's going to be you getting that call at 2 a.m. and shuffling over to your computer in the dark. Last February, when S3 went down because someone copy-pasted a command and deleted a bunch of servers, Netflix was one of the only sites that stayed up, which was convenient because the rest of us weren't working at all. Well, why did Netflix not go down? To answer this, we have to go all the way back to 2012, when a storm knocked Netflix offline for about 3 hours. The company realized that they were vulnerable to regional outages, and it behooved Netflix to pay attention. They lose hundreds of thousands of dollars an hour. And that was old data, so it may actually be crossing $1 million at this point for every hour of downtime. That's a level of stress you and I, and most of us in this room, just aren't used to. It'd be like your boss standing behind you lighting wads of cash on fire as you try and debug something. When Netflix moved to AWS, they applied their chaos monkey theory to their infrastructure. Netflix apps switch between availability zones automatically when one goes down. This avoids any kind of service disruption and is awesome. But here's the catch. You can never max out capacity. Otherwise, the system wouldn't be able to remove the remaining users over to another region when one fails. And this cost adds up fast. Most of us don't have the resources of Netflix. We must stay within our constraints. And sometimes that means getting a little creative. In fact, sometimes constraints can make us more creative. The processes put in place by Firescope worked. They saved lives. And for decades, that's all we needed. And then 19 hijackers flew planes into the Twin Towers. In the aftermath of the funerals and the pain and the bad decisions, it became woefully apparent that we, as Americans, were not prepared to meet a crisis of that magnitude. FireScope evolved into NIMS, the National Incident Management System, which standardized resources, processes, and terminology across all emergency response organizations. My favorite part of NIMS is that it standardized terminology. I think that's something we could all learn to do. Even as we embrace DevOps, the culture and language I hear from different groups, devs and ops, is often different. Sometimes those groups use different words to describe the same thing. In fact, it's not just the words, right? It's that shared history, the stories. We work in an industry which measures ourselves on intelligence, which is great. But it also means that one of the hardest things for us to do is to look stupid, even if that means just asking what something means. So don't depend on folks to ask. Make sure everyone on your team, juniors, seniors, devs, ops, even security, all use the same words to describe the same thing. NIMS is flexible and scalable, which means it can meet the needs of any incident, at least any we have come across so far, right? And isn't that what we need our systems to be? Flexible, being able to adapt to the ever-changing needs of the business, and let's be honest, the ever-worsening state of our code bases. This is what the FEMA Incident Command hierarchy looks like. Now, this is a bit much. I would say this is heavy-handed. Hierarchy in tech is always going to be a controversial topic, and I have strong opinions of it. I'm sure many of you do as well. But even as a fan of hierarchy, I think this is too much. This level of constraint isn't helpful. In fact, many of our teams don't actually have enough people to fill these roles, right? What I'm suggesting is a lot more like this. Yes, there needs to be someone in charge of the scene. The cats, they don't hurt themselves. There needs to be a designated leader, someone who is empowered to gather information, make quick decisions, and delegate responsibility. Imagine Amy, a developer, is the primary person on call tonight. Now, if you just took a short breath and choked on your coffee a little bit, yes, Amy is a developer, and yes, she is on call. Don't at me. I think developers should be on call. Amy receives an alert at 2 o'clock in the morning because dumpsters only catch fire in the middle of the night, right? She checks it out but is unable to resolve the situation quickly. And because she's comfortable, she escalates it to the secondary person on call. Jessica stumbles over to her computer and is also unable to fix the issue. European customers are about to come online, and it's important to address the situation soon. They jointly, together, make a decision to make the situation a full-fledged incident. And because the company has strong processes in place, this is easy. It's time to deploy an incident command hierarchy. So, buckle up. You can set up a different alerting system in PagerDuty or VictorOps. You could use a phone tree. You can deploy a fleet of pigeons. I don't really care how you contact the people who need to be called, as long as you can do it quickly and easily. Just like you have a primary and secondary person on call, I suggest you rotate incident teams. This is an awesome opportunity for some of your junior developers and people with different skill sets and interests to roll up their sleeves and jump in. And if you're experiencing heart palpitations at the thought of a junior engineer running an incident response, just take a minute, relax, it's gonna be okay. There is no better way to train and empower your employees than to give them the autonomy and resources to do what they need, or they do best, right? Engineer solutions. If they start to flounder, they can have an entire team on which they can rely. While the people who fill these roles will rotate, the roles themselves will not. And everyone on the team should have the opportunity to fill a role and be trained in that role. Put people where they're uncomfortable. Because discomfort is the first step in learning, I think. And if it's within a safe environment, it's extremely healthy. Your most senior engineer, the one who knows literally everything inside and out, he's now your comm chief. And that brand new engineer you just brought on, she's your incident commander. So what does this look like in practice? Well, just like a firefighter, the incident commander is going to start an initial size up. What services are being infected, which customers are impacted. And that's where you start taking action. The IC will determine how many engineers the tech chief needs to have at their disposal. And just like an IC at a fire would determine how many fire engines were needed at the scene. ICs regularly call an extra engine or two and have them wait 3 to 4 blocks away. It's a good way of keeping them close, but not distracting right at the scene. I suggest you warn a few engineers if you think you might need them. It gives them time to get up, make some coffee, put some pants on. If it's up to the tech chief at this point to wake up the engineers that they need. And at this point, I want you to also hop on a video call. Slack is an incredibly useful tool, and I know we've all grown to rely on it heavily. How could we possibly communicate without GIFs and emoticons? Well, I want you to go back to the original, your actual face. People will always have a natural inclination to talk one-on-one and communicate verbally, especially when their fingers are busy typing. So give them that opportunity. If the comm chief is available or one of the engineers is particularly glassy-eyed and tired, have them jot notes about what's being said or attempted. It'll inform decisions as you move forward, ease communication, and serve as historical reference for your post-incident review. The tech team will likely start looking more closely at monitoring and observability systems. I'm sure there's 8 vendors out there who will help you with that. Engineers may also look at recent deploys, start digging into code. The comm chief is a really underappreciated role in this situation. This person's first job, in my opinion, should be to schedule that post-incident review. Now, this seems unintuitive, right? That's like calling the dentist to schedule an appointment while your house is burning down. But I think here's what it does. It eliminates the blame and shame from a situation. I recommend the comm chief make a statement internally to simply say, it doesn't matter why this happened or who, if anyone, is the cause. What's important now is that we'll dig into how we can improve our systems and processes later. For now, stay focused on fixing the issue and communicating with your team. We only have so much brain energy, all of us. And if everyone on your team is worried about whether they're at fault and they're going to be fired, well, they're not focused on finding a solution. And if you're sitting there thinking you've never worried about being fired, you're obviously not like me and have imposter syndrome and stress out every time your boss calls for unscheduled one-on-one on Friday. The second job of the comm officer is to take notes, to literally record the situation. It doesn't need to be a complete record. It's not a murder trial, at least yet. But the more information you have, the more productive your post-incident reviews will be. Jot down timestamps, who said what, how the incident is progressing. Now, this is never going to be used as a way of identifying fault. That's not the point. You can't out-engineer human error. It's part of who we are. But you can create systems and processes to eliminate, or more likely, reduce opportunities for us to make mistakes. Throughout the entire process, the IC is in charge of communicating important information to leadership and other stakeholders. This includes making sure a status page is up, detailing what's happened and who's impacted, as well as communicating the same message via Twitter or whatever social media thing your customers use. Maybe you post a story to Snapchat because your customers are 13. I don't know. The IC's most important job is to provide cover for the teams on the ground, so to speak. Executives should have zero access to engineers and the team members working on an issue. They should never, ever be allowed to sit on a video chat and just observe as an incident is taking place. Executives sometimes like to fire people. Executives make people nervous. If someone does come onto a video call and ask to be in charge or ask to observe, I want you to ask them if they're ready to take command. They're most likely not, and they will bow out. The IC is that protective barrier that allows folks to do their job without interruption, what I like to call a shit umbrella. At the end of everything, I want everyone to take 5 minutes and just jot down their experience. You're going to have such a better memory of the entire thing at that moment. Taking just 5 minutes will give you better information for that post-incident review. And the IC's last job is to make sure that that already scheduled incident review actually takes place. That person will facilitate the conversation. And as a group, they will together decide what went wrong, what could have prevented the issue, and any kind of action that needs to be taken to prevent it in the future. We are not firefighters. Sometimes I think we're more like pyros than anything else. But we're also the only ones who can put out the fires we occasionally start. And the more we adopt the well-proven practices of incident management, the less we'll get burned. Thank you so much, and thanks for putting up with the AV issues.